I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
11 wins in 34, 2 wins in 8, a cracking start by Joe Lumley, and we discuss Borough's performance at Reading. We speak to Dom Shaw from the Gazette around Neil Warnock's tenure, and we chat to opposition fans from Sheffield United and Hull City. This is the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is all your matchday chatter in a pod.
Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome back to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana, and for this week only, the return of Elliot Venice. Elliot, welcome back to the Borough Breakdown Podcast. It's been a hot minute.
Thank you very much, Johnny. I'm glad to be back with you guys and hope we've got a fun episode in store.
The throwback. It made it a throwback, isn't it? A real, the OGs would remember. The
nine,
OGs.
Yeah, nine months it's been.
Yeah, 9 months, really? Wow. But yeah, with Tom this week, he's currently fighting Alexander Usyk for the for the heavyweight title of the world at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But we've got Tom's thoughts coming on the podcast too. But in the early kickoff on Saturday, Alan Halovic's goal was enough to give Reading a 1-0 win over the Borough. And now Borough have 9 points from 9 games. Dana, I normally ask you for 3 words, but this is a safe haven for you. Tell me how you feel.
How do I feel? Well, after the game yesterday, I spent my time making a fan cam of I Talk or Anchor with the background music Adele rolling in the deep. So, yeah, I'm fine.
So, is this I Talk back?
No, but it's just good to reminisce on the good times, isn't it?
Yeah, well, me and Tom have got a bit more work to do, haven't we? So, what else? How do you feel? Because, you know, it was a poor game yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think the only benefit to Borough fans this year is that you can actually have a drink, at least at the home games if you're there, to get
your
you through.
Benefit.
Yeah, because at least last year when we were terrible as well, you had to just kind of sit and watch it at home and you're just kind of, it's kind of depressing, but yeah, alcohol sees me through, I think.
Concourse, Elliot shakes hands.
No, but yeah, it was a very poor game yesterday, and I just don't know where Borough are going really at the moment, and I'm just disappointed. I just hate being a Borough fan at times. It's like the summary, like, you can just end it there if you want, but yeah, that's my feelings.
Well, going into Saturday's game, no Championship team had conceded more goals per game than Reading, faced more shots from open play, faced more shots from set pieces, and the Royals had the worst expected goals against record in the league and hadn't kept a clean sheet in 12 games. Q Borough, 2 shots on target, and Joe Lumley had the second highest XG on the pitch, just behind Matt Crooks. Yeah. Q Borough, Dana, how would you assess the game against Reading? Because that just screams typical Borough of what I just said.
Yeah, and I mean, I will add to that, Joe Lumley accounted for 2 of our 6 shots at goal in that game, and I must point out, if anyone didn't know, that Joe Lumley is our goalkeeper, so I think that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? I mean, we've spoken in recent podcasts about a lack of game plan. I do think that we had one, at least for the first 5-10 minutes. It was to punt long diagonals up towards Isaiah Jones. But then it just felt as though Reading sort of sussed us out, and their right back, Tetek, did fantastically well against Jones. There's actually a stat that I found after the game that Jones didn't have one successful dribble, and basically Tetek didn't allow it. He won all of his tackles, and they were all against Jones in that first half. So I think it was very obvious very quickly what Borough were trying to do, and then we didn't really have an answer to it. We didn't really have a counter move to them countering us, and really disappointed. There was basically no midfield. The amount of gaps, I think at one point, I think it was about the 18th minute, Sparrar comes so far deep to pick up the ball, and he's our striker. It was just, there was no midfield. I don't think we got Tav on the ball anywhere near enough. It was a really, really glum afternoon, I think is probably the best way to describe it.
Would you agree it was a glum afternoon in all respect?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think there was much of a look in that I thought we were going to score, to be honest. The match facts came up in the second half, I think around 60, 70 minutes, and we hadn't had a touch in the opposition box. I think we'd had one shot. So as I did a count from there, I think we had one where Crooks laid it off to Fierro, I think, on the edge of the box. And the last couple of touches that we had in the box were like the last couple of minutes, obviously. But it was weird. Like I said, when Dana mentioned there with no game plan, I feel like we don't have that. And I know a lot of people shout out about tactics these days, but I don't feel like Neil Warnock has tactics. I feel like he just has beliefs and certain like principles in his gameplay, but he doesn't set out in a certain way for game plans. He just kind of, he's a man manager and motivator rather than a tactician. And yeah, the game's passing him by, I think, in that respect.
So the two shots on target yesterday, so you were saying there that Neil Warnock doesn't have tactics, but why do you think Borough are struggling to create chances then, especially against a side that had no defenders and three, well, mainly midfielders at the back and full backs, and then three makeshift midfielders playing in different positions as well. So, but why do you think Borough struggled to create the chances?
I just think we got sussed out early on, as Dana mentioned there with Isaiah Jones. I think they've clearly looked at who's been our biggest threat so far this season, which has been Jones. He's been, you know, electric in the home games that I've been to this season, and he's clearly our most creative outlet. So if you nullify that, and then the players don't pick up on it quickly enough to kind of go a different route, go Tav's side. Tav's more than capable of knocking it past a couple of players, then you're not going to create. So, yeah.
Is there anything that Borough could have done differently, maybe?
Be better.
just do better.
Yeah. A lot of things all over the pitch, really. I don't feel like chance creation has been that much of a problem overall this season. I mean, yesterday it was, but I feel like overall we've had quite exciting games, even though we've came out on the wrong end of them. I feel like we've created a lot of chances. I think last week against Blackpool we hit the crossbar twice, didn't we? So, I don't think that's been too much of a problem. But if you have defensive issues and then you add in the chance creation side of the game, if you can't do that as well, then it's going to be terrible. So I thought we put a strong enough team out to get a result. So I don't know. I think a lot of we've got to work on actually building a tactic rather than just like throwing people out there, say give it to Jones and try and hope for the best, because it's not going to work.
That's a good point, actually. Sorry about the team. I think it was a dike steal away from being the best team that we've named this season, and I did have high hopes. But you look at the way that we approach games, and there's nobody in midfield offering themselves up. You could say that this is a personnel issue, but it isn't for me. This has been a problem whilst Neil Warnock's been a manager, that we bypass the midfield completely, and we did it again yesterday. And we have the benefit of ball playing midfielders that want to get on the ball, but they're not offering themselves up for it, because I feel like it's clearly a tactic not to do so, because you see those sort of switches and the punts into the channels. That's really all we do, to be honest. And I put a stat up about Borough's second halves. I know that this was in a home context, but I think that how poor we are in second halves can probably be said in away games as well. And I think it comes down to a lack of a plan B, maybe, or tactical flexibility. I don't think we have it.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Dana, like around Reading yesterday, and how controlled they were across the pitch. And For me, I thought it was due to their more compact shape, trying to make things a little bit more difficult. They've got a few players in different positions, so it's important to keep things tight. Do you think that maybe played a part in why Reading looked so in control of the game yesterday, or do you think there was more to it?
Well, I think it helps that they had the majority of their team were midfielders. I mean, they were pulling the strings, to be fair. I think Danny Drinkwater and John Swift in particular, 16, 48 successful passes respectively. If you look at Borough, Paddy McNair had the most with 48, but 16 of those were to Dale Fry beside him. So, you know, ironically, that was our second most frequent passing combination behind Fry to Bowler. And that's all we were really doing. We passed it along the defence. But then when it comes to the midfield, Housen was receiving the ball a lot and passed the ball a lot. But, I mean, Martin Piero had 19 touches of the ball, received the ball 9 times. It's just, they were dictating the game, really. And it, I think it came through Danny Drinkwater and John Swift, who had two really good games, respectively.
Yeah, well, I'm going to come to Martin Piero in a second, Dana, but with the man marking system as well, it reared its head once more. I know you're not a big fan of it, and Housen lost his man. Is it time we tweaked it? Is it time to ditch it altogether? Because I'm looking ahead to Sheffield United already, and it petrifies me.
Yeah, I feel like all you need to do now is to look at the opposition and to see which players have good off the ball movement or have good pace, and then they're immediately the danger men. And yeah, the second goal, I'm not a huge fan of Housen, but Piero didn't cover himself in glory. Dale Fry came out to attend to Junior Hoylett, then Paddy McNair steps out, and it's just a mess. And you should never have a situation where you've got Lee Peltier in the box, basically marking two players. It was a 2-1 in Reading's favour in the box. And yeah, I mean, the finish was rather fortuitous for Halilovic. I think he kicks it twice. But this man marking system is just so easy to cut us open. And it just seems like something that Warnock is very intent on having, but it's costing us goals, it's costing us points. And in regards to your question, to answer your question, should we tweak it or should we ditch it? I think you've got to at least tweak it, because we're just not benefiting from it. And as I mentioned before, it's well into the realms of counterproductive.
Mm. It's definitely counterproductive. I mean, with the way Borough are playing at the moment and the way teams are starting to find us out, they're just finding little pockets of space, a little overload here and there. And if you switch
triangles.
Off, yeah, if you switch off for a second.
Well, if someone gets dragged out of position because they're marking, then you easily just, you know, someone just moves to that spot where the player was. If Bowler moves over because he's chasing someone who is man marking, then, you know, normally, you know, you say you should shift over a little bit to kind of block that empty space. But if he follows him, like, to the other side of the field and Bowler ends up in right midfield, then
it has.
And you're completely out of sorts. So I'm all for doing it a little bit if Bowler's clearly the person who was closest to him and he tracks him for a little bit. And then you kind of shift him off onto someone else if it's not really any immediate danger. Because you end up with the team just all over the place.
It does seem like there is mass confusion almost. And I know I nitpicked Johnny House, and I put a blog post up on WordPress after the QPR game, in which I think everybody knows, and he probably knew himself, that he had a stinker in that game. But the amount of times that he's cost us, and I specifically noted it after the Fulham game, the first game of the season, this is what I said. I said, Johnny Housen often lost Fabio Carvalho in the man marking, but this was down to clever movement from the Fulham playmaker. Worth keeping an eye on, though. The amount of times that I've seen Johnny Housen switch off is ridiculous. And I hate this sort of point scoring almost, but if Jed Spence did that, he'd be pretty much personally driven to Hartlepool.
Why to Hartlepool?
I don't know. It's just
don't disrespect Dave Challoner's men like that.
Stockton Town, then we'll say Stockton. But it's like, I don't feel like Housen is good enough in this man-marking system. I think he switches off too much. Yes, you can say he's sort of up against it because he's in a lone midfield role, but he's played in a midfield too before this season, and he struggled as well.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you need 11 N'Golo Kantes all over the pitch. As you know, Schneepy with unbelievable work rate and concentration. And yeah, we've got some players who can do it better than others, but we've seen that it clearly isn't working, because you see where the space comes from. And you, even yesterday, it wasn't really from a marking perspective, but when they got in behind, I don't know if it was John Swift, was it? And he had that shot where he had like loads of time on the ball.
Oh, yeah, acres of space, yeah.
And, you know, they fluffed it. But, yeah, just that type of, how can you have that much space? It baffles me.
Do you think he struggles maybe with when you had the likes of Pajero playing yesterday? You know, he was looking to get more on the front foot a little bit more. Do you think that maybe exposed Housen to it to some extent?
Yeah, Pajero didn't help. There was times where he, even in the attacking phases, he could have dropped deep to receive it. But, I mean, as I mentioned, it's an easy excuse almost, because it's timing of the criticism. It's probably not best for me to criticise Johnny Housen after that game yesterday, because everyone keeps saying, well, he was a low midfielder, he was isolated, etc., and he was doing a lot. Yeah, I understand that. But we have seen him in a midfield too. Paddy McNair played alongside him, and Sam Morsey as well, and he has switched off of that man marking. So I think it's just, I mean, it's difficult to just blame Housen solely, and we'll say that there's other players that have sort of not benefited from this man-marking system. But that triangle of the centre-halves, be it Grant Hall, Dale Fry or Paddy McNair, and then Housen, is a very dangerous against us. And I think that needs rectifying for me.
So would you suggest maybe playing a double pivot, maybe?
Maybe. I mean,
it doesn't look, at the moment, you look at Borough's heat map or like pure, like average positions, the double pivot's never really there. It's just kind of like we're technically playing like a 4-1-4 whatever, because 4-1-4-1, but it doesn't really feel like that, because it feels like we don't even have a strike on the pitch at the moment. But like, it's with that, you've got, I think you've got to be, you see it now with Calvin Phillips at Leeds. He does get exposed quite frequently, but they always have the runners to kind of, you know, protect it to some extent. But I think with Borough, we just don't seem to have that, and it's just a little overload here and there. Like you were saying, the man marking system doesn't help, because positionally we're all apart. I think there was a point yesterday that Lee Peltier was the highest position player on the pitch, above Spira. So like it doesn't really seem to fit. Like I was saying, that I think you were saying there, right? I think you're absolutely spot on, D. Maybe a tweak, maybe a potential shift in system, because when you're like against a Jokanovic team on Tuesday night, they're going to cause overloads. They're going to rotate formation. They're going to move from a 4-2-3-1 to a 4-3-3, and they'll make things really difficult for us. And it could be a bit of a thumping if we don't get it right, to be honest. But now that I've said that, typical Borough win 3-0, and we'll all go home happy. But Denny, you've alluded to him a couple of times. I feel like I keep coming to you, but Ellie, you do have a few questions. Don't worry, I've got a few questions up your sleeve.
Thanks, mate.
But Martin Pajero, first league start. You said he didn't really help himself, so how do you think he coped in the game?
Yeah, it was. I mean, his performance was a bit of an anticlimax, but I'm not going to criticise him too much. It's, as I mentioned, he received the fewest amount of passes in the game, and to be fair, he was getting into some good positions, particularly just before he came off. That was when he was starting to drop deep. But I mean, it's fine. It's going to come with games. I have no doubts that Martin Pajero will improve. I just feel as though, yeah, defensively, yeah, he could have helped Johnny Housen out. But I mean, he's an attacking player at the end of the day, isn't he? And you really want to see him affect the play at the top of the pitch. Understand that he's a midfielder. He has to sort of do both sides, but I just can't help but feel that in another team, in a more progressive team, we just let him play. And, you know, let Johnny Howison do his thing.
Do you think that Pajero could be a more of a number 10, or would you like to see him more of a deep-lying midfielder?
Yeah, I think possibly a number 10. I think if he's deep-lying, then he's got that, what we've heard of him, of being sort of a ball carrier. But I think what I sort of seen from him yesterday, I know that it's kind of a cliche almost that people say you need to get up to speed with the league and everything like that. I think it was more the other way around, in that he was giving away quite a lot of fouls and tackles, and I feel like people just assume that people are soft in South America because of Messi or whatever, that they're just going to go, you know what I mean? But it is quite a tough league, and the fouls that are given here are a lot softer. I think he was getting quite frustrated that he just thought he was, you know, he was putting in fair challenges and he was getting drawn back a lot. But I think it's hard to criticise him after just you know, one league start. I think we've got to see more from him, but he'd probably get dropped now and he won't play for five games. So,
Neil, well, I've played him now, fans, so now you're happy. Now you've seen Pajero, I'm never going to play him again.
Yeah.
But how many games do you think it'll take Pajero to fully bed in then?
I mean, I feel like this bedding in thing, I think it's a bit of a myth anyway. I think just because he's had a bad game yesterday doesn't mean he's sort of not bedded in. I mean, to obviously gel with the team and have a comfortable foothold on maybe the language and where he lives and, you know, becoming a social, you know, joining the social group with the team takes a bit of time. But, you know, footballing wise, when you're out on the pitch, I think they're kind of just, you forget about all that anyway. You're there playing for your teammates, and if you're a good footballer, you know how to play. That's just how it is. And, you know, the Championship's still a decent level of football wherever you came from in the world, so he's clearly good enough. But, that's not really a full answer to your question, but I don't think there's like a bedding in period. I think he should be in and around the first team a lot more than he has been already.
Do you like what you've seen so far from the glimpses?
Yeah, snippets here and there. Yeah, I feel like he's been okay. But you know, what can you say when the whole team's performing poorly and we lose the game?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, let's chat about his midfield counterpart in Matt Crookston, because red card yesterday, Neil Warnock said in his post-match press conference that Borough coming into the game at that time. Firstly, do you think the red card was harsh?
Yeah, slightly. I don't think he meant to do it. I mean, I know like a lot of cards and fouls these days, there's not much malice in them. I don't think people intend on it. But I still think it was a bit harsh. I don't think he'd really caught the goalkeeper all that much. But at least with him out, this is kind of a bit of a weird one to say, but I guess with him out, Pereiro's got a chance of actually getting more starts. But Crooks has been decent this season. So.
Lee Peltier can play in that role if you want.
Yeah, we're not having Lee Peltier or Martin Craney, as I referred to him yesterday. He's literally the next Martin Craney. He's not playing midfield for us all.
It's a heavy shirt to pass on, that Martin Craney role, you know.
They do have the same number, don't they?
They do,
14.
Ah, well, there you go.
We've clocked it.
The Martin Craney show lives on.
Let me see
on
who
Lee
you really
Peltier.
Are. Scooby-Doo. Martin Craney.
I can't wait until he's at Luton next year and he scores against us.
Oh, God, that game.
Just Martin Craney, what a talented football. Honestly, those were the days where you knew you were grinding out a result after the third minute. And you just see, we'd score straight away and the Martin Craney would just look up and then he'd get the wink off Tony Pulis and he'd just start doing his warm-up for 87 minutes and then he'd come on for the final four. What a talent. But Tom, I want to call the Tom Nails. Post-game, obviously I mentioned it there, Warnock said they were coming into the game. Would you agree, really? Because it Warren never looked like scoring for so long in the game. The red card happened, of course, and I mean, Joe Lumley nearly scored, but apart from that, there wasn't really much to chat about, was there? So do you think Warnock's just pulling below your eyes a bit?
Yeah, a little bit. Because I think even if, like, you know, Halilovic had completely fluffed that shot and it went wide and we drew the game 0-0, I feel like it would have been a bit harsher on Reading. They had a lot of chances. I thought they were very good. You know, a lot of those midfielders were pulling the strings. John Swift was really good. Ejaria was really good. You know, if they drew that game, the fans would have been typical on their back saying, like, oh, how have we not managed to come out with a win in that game? Well, we've seen it with home games this season where we've managed to somehow not win some of the games after dominating, especially in the first half. So it would have been a bit harsh, I think, on Reading not to come out with a result there. So maybe he's just saying it because it was only one goal in the game, but I think it was, yeah, the comments are a bit strange.
In terms of the game itself, we got our Arnie Pye in the sky and Tom Green yesterday. Was at the game to give his assessment on Borough's performance.
Hey guys, Tom here, reporting from my travels. Looking forward to listening to this one. I want to make some sort of analogy around the AJ fight to sum up my feelings on Borough yesterday, but we weren't even that good. The best analogy I can kind of make from it is from when I waited 40 minutes in a queue for 3 pints before the fight. Just absolutely boring, just like Borough were yesterday. We offered nothing going forward. We were too slow coming out from the back. And considering we were playing a team with no defenders who concede the most shots on target anyway per game, I should be baffled by the fact that we didn't create anything. But in all honesty, it just seems normal for the moment. I really can't tell where Warnock's coming from with his comments that we've played well even though we've lost the last few games, or that the lads put a shift in yesterday and can't be faulted. They really didn't. And I think saying that is a bit of an insult to the Borough fans who made the trip down to Reading for a lunchtime kickoff. They were one positive of the day for me. The support I thought was immense at the start of the game, and the crowd did try to get us back into it. But even when we were 0-0 down, they were trying to encourage us to do something. But unfortunately, the fans can't put a shift in for the players and they were let down. So overall, really disappointing game. And I'm kind of past saying now that we need to improve next game, because we all know that and we're saying it every week at the moment. It's just, it's glaringly obvious and something needs to change.
Okay, so thanks for that, Tom. Now, let's chat about Borough's form. I know we spoke about it on previous podcasts as well. But Borough's form, I'm going to compare a couple of years for you and see what you think. But in 2019, Borough got 43 points. In 2020, after 32 games, so from January to November, appreciate the 32 games, of course, are over a longer period of time due to COVID. But it was 11 wins, 11 draws and 10 defeats with 44 points. In 2021, so from January to yesterday, of course, was 11 wins, 6 draws and 15 defeats. Neil Warnock has, of course, lost 42% of his Middlesbrough games in charge and won 37% of games in charge of the Borough. The regression has started, of course, but Dan, is there more to Neil Warnock and Borough's form? Is there a deeper lying issue?
Well, I think we've just stagnated, almost gone backwards, really. I mean, we don't really have an identity, and it's really strange that, I mean, Don Goodman on commentary the other day, I do like Don Goodman, I think he's my favourite Sky commentator, but he was talking a load of waffle the other day. Absolutely.
Recent performances suggest that Middlesbrough could be in either playoffs this season. We've won 11 in the calendar year, Don.
Mental on it, but yeah, I mean, the opposition fan narrative seems to be that you know what you're going to get from a Neil Warnock side. I would really invite someone to come on and please tell us what you expect from a Neil Warnock side, because if it's physicality, we're not seeing that. If it's a good set piece team, we're not seeing that. If it's hard workers,
solid defensively, we're not seeing that.
Solid defensively, we're absolutely not resolute. It's we've gone backwards, and I think that's the most worrying part. The fact that there's no, as I mentioned last week, there's no hallmarks of this team being a promotion team, and surely that's the aim. Surely building on last season is the aim, top six. If it is, then I think Neil Warnock's position has to be under a very intense gaze right now because of just the, not just the first nine games of the season, but as you mentioned there, Johnny, the year as a whole. And if it isn't the aim, then the question has to be asked, why is Neil Warnock still here?
Yeah, well, you're going to, obviously, I think you're hashtag Warnock out nowadays. I think you're near enough. Well, I'm officially in the club. I'm fully Warnock out, and I'll say my points in a second, but after we speak to Dom Shaw. But Els, would you agree with Dana's points there around like having no identity, not being a typical Neil Warnock side? But also, do you think there is more to it than just the manager? Because the points per game for the last three seasons from a calendar year perspective haven't been particularly great.
I think I do agree with Dana. Even when he originally came on board, I kind of got slated for that first time of even saying like I didn't really want him to come on board. To be fair, I know people give me backlash because of it, because you know you do have to give people a chance, and we did, and we did have a good little stint, especially last season from the sort of August to December. But overall, I think we've just became, I've seen the tweet actually, so whoever said this, I am just kind of stealing your identity, but it is true. But
stealing your identity?
I can't remember who it was who tweeted it, but they basically said we've just became one of those championship teams that we used to despise, that we've just became a nothing team in the championship. We're just going to languish by like all the other teams do in the past, and eventually they'll get one or two good years where they'll get a good manager in, or they'll change owner, and then they'll have a good recruitment period. But you know, we're just a a Huddersfield, a Forest, a Derby. We're not, there's nothing to us in
that's
the last
offensive.
Couple of years.
That's properly offended me, that.
Sorry. but I just mean, like, that. Even, like, going from Karanka to just, like, skipping through managers like Gary Monk, Tony Pulis, Neil Warnock, Johnny Woodgate, who wasn't even a manager before it, it just screams like there's no plan whatsoever. For me, I just think there's, you know, part of it is obviously he can't go out on the pitch and force the players to win games, you know what I mean? But we've completely revamped the team since when he came on board. It's almost a new team, apart from Dale Fry, Johnny Howson and Paddy McNair. It's a completely new team. So it doesn't really have much excuses to go off, to be honest. So I think we were saying in the car on the way up, me and Dana, that there's not much media attention about his position, and not many fans, I'd even say, really on board of getting rid of Neil Warnock. But I think because of the position, I think we've dropped to 18th, have we now? I think if that gets lower by Tuesday, going in that whole game, and you know we're both in the bottom four by then, which I'm guessing we probably will be, both us and Hull.
With two teams being deducted points as well below us, with Derby and Reading.
Exactly. So, if we stay around that bottom four or five, coming into like game week 15, and then he's really got to be under scrutiny of getting sacked, because I don't see how that is anywhere near, you know, if we were still mid table, you know, you could still have some qualms of being like, well, we haven't progressed from last season, but to go backwards after signing 12 players in the summer is just bonkers. So
Sky were really drumming the narrative that we've been unlucky this season, and when you look at our expected goals against, it's one of the lowest in the league. So I think it's 0.84 at home, and we've conceded what, 7 goals at home. So I mean, we're massively underperforming in terms of clean sheets and conceding goals, or keeping goals out, sorry. But I prefer to look at it in the way of the build-up to the goals. Yes, the shots themselves, I'm thinking Lyndon Dykes' tight angle shot going through Joe Lomney's legs, but the build-up to the shots, and again, comes back to the man marking, is incredibly poor. You've got players that are just switching off for that split second, and all it takes is that quick acceleration to get into that space that they've essentially left behind, and then you've got a shot on goal. So
I think that's one thing that has progressed, actually. It's a great point you make there about XG in the past year, that it doesn't take into context everything that happened before it. A quality of shot could be, you know, the quality of shots perhaps just are lower in the Championship because of the quality of the players. But yeah, when you look at the build-up to some of the goals, you can see why the goals actually came about, because, you know, they've just came from nothing sometimes, and the defending's been terrible, people being out of position, not marking and stuff. So
yeah, in Ruud Gullit's book on how to watch football, it's he chats about like mistakes and when they do occur, and he says that you tend to find the biggest mistake when you're watching football would be like 3 moves before it actually happens. So like you could see if like it could be like a third pass before the through ball like gets put in, you know, etc. So it's that third point. So it's always like, look, when you look at Borough now, when you look at the man marking system, you can see the little tweaks around Borough's play where one little switch off here could affect a big catastrophic error somewhere else. And it's very, very interesting to watch Middlesbrough now, because I feel like we are just accident prone all over the pitch, and it's very, very difficult for us to watch. But I'm gonna ask, do we have high expectations, or is it a case of Middlesbrough have became this team that we've never really wanted to watch anymore? Because if you look at the points over the time we've been in the Championship, so like what, 10, I think it's 9, 10 seasons now, we're in 10th position in terms of average points, so that would signal that we're a top end mid table side. So have we got higher expectations on what we want, or are we just statistically an average team? Because we don't really tend to challenge. I think it's only been 3 or 4 times that we've actually been above the average to get in the playoffs.
I don't think we have high expectations. I just think if you're a team in the Championship and you're not looking to get promoted, then what is the point? Like, there literally is not, you know, if you're not looking to actually like go and challenge and get in the Premier League, which I know at the end of the day, if you take football as a whole sort of prism and be like, it's not the be all and end all, but you just have that promotion run means you're winning games, your fans are enjoying going, you're playing good football. You've probably had teams where they've not finished in the top 6 and they've finished top 10, but they've played beautiful stuff. And we've seen that sometimes from Brentford for years where they've missed out before going up, where the fans will have still enjoyed themselves even when they originally came up Actually, I'm thinking Bournemouth now, sorry. When Bournemouth came up, I think they finished 12th or 10th, did they, in the first year? And then they got promoted the season after. That even year of finishing 12th would have been, you know, a great year for them and for the fans. And I think that's what it's got to be about. I don't think we necessarily have high expectations. I don't think most people say we belong in the Premier League. When you look over, like, the whole history of the club, I think it's probably swayed towards the Championship now, has it? I think we might have been just... had more premiers than Championship, but I think it's probably the Championship has overtook now. So, yeah,
you're gonna have to get me scrambling on my laptop.
I think it was before that they were very even. I think they were like 50 something years each, and then obviously the 1 or 2 years in the third division. But yeah, I think it's obviously outweighed that now, and we are between those two divisions. And I think we're probably going to be in and around this division for a long time because. The money that's being made in the Premier League and making that bigger gap between it is only going to get stronger. So,
Well, let's chat about Neil Warnock and the future of Neil Warnock. Let me give you a little stat before we speak to Dom Shaw. So, in terms of historical managerial sackings at the Borough, Gareth Southgate was sacked on the 20th of October. Gordon Strachan was sacked on the 18th of October. And Tony Mowbray was sacked on the 21st of October. So, if we are going to make a managerial change, I'm going to put some money on Neil Warnock on the 17th. So then we'll have the 17th, 18th, 20th, and the 21st. Or it could be the 19th. But we do play Peterborough.
It's a weekend just after my birthday. What a nice birthday present that would be.
We do play Peterborough on the 16th. So it could be a don't get a performance there. Who knows? History is interesting, isn't it? Right, but let's speak to Dom Shaw from the Gazette, because we asked Dom, are we coming towards the end of Neil Warnock's reign as Middlesbrough boss?
In answer to the question as to whether Neil Warnock is likely to leave Borough before or during the international break, no, I'd say at the minute that seems extremely unlikely to me. Now, obviously, never say never. You never know what's around the corner. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow in football, never mind 2 or 3 weeks down the line. But there have been no indications from Warnock that he's thinking about going, that he's considering throwing in the towel. I don't think he'd want to end what is, you know, increasingly likely to be his last season in football by throwing in the towel in the first couple of months of the season. Now, obviously, there's disappointment at every level as to how Borough have started this season. This wasn't what Warnock was expecting. And I think you look at the team, I know there's mitigating factors in that, you know, we're trying to get players integrated and there have been some injuries. But still, looking at the squad and the quality in the squad, you know, Borough shouldn't be where they are in the table. So it has been extremely disappointing. But Neil Warnock will still back himself to turn things around at this point. You know, it is early in the season, so this campaign can't be written off just yet. The concern is, though, that, you know, this stuttering form and performance from the end of last season have carried over into this season. There have been more disappointing and underwhelming performances this season than promising ones. You know, it's 1-7 now against a shocking Forest side that proved to be Chris Hughton's last game. So you wonder there whether the players had thrown it in, and that says it all, really. I think what you don't expect of a Neil Warnock team is a lack of identity, but that's the case for Borough right now. You watch them and you don't really know what they are. They've got an array of attacking talent that they're not getting the best out of, but on the other hand, it's not as though they're steely and hard to beat. I've seen some critics saying that Warnock's approach is dated, but I do have an issue with that in that a year ago, his team were ticking along lovely. And at Christmas, I'm sure I wasn't alone in tipping Borough for a top 6 spot at least. How many times did Warnock talk about how he backed his team to really kick on and come good in the second half of the season? What he didn't expect was the direct opposite. But since Christmas, you know, for whatever reason, things have gone south. A point made on Twitter this morning from Rob Scott, and I agree with this. He said perhaps Warnock has too many options this season, and with so much attacking talent at his disposal, he maybe feels forced to set up the team in a way that he wouldn't ordinarily. You know, I'm not sure, but I think, you know, there's no doubt Borough have brought in some talented footballers, but and the change in strategy is pretty clear, really. Some of the signings are what you deem Warnock players, and others are perhaps not. You know, regardless of how talented they are, it's getting them. It's finding a place for them in the team and making it fit, isn't it? And as I say, finding that identity that Borough are scratching around for at the minute. fans have been vocally critical of Warnock on social media. You know, some have called for a change. What I would say is in the away end at Reading, from where I was sat, you know, they were very supportive, the fans there. They chanted his name. But the next two games do feel big. You know, Sheffield United on Tuesday, I think other than Fulham on the opening weekend of the season, is Borough's toughest test so far. Borough need to find a result and performance from somewhere. And hopefully the sense of occasion there, you know, United will bring a good following. They'll give Warnock, obviously, a fantastic reception. Hopefully that sense of occasion, the atmosphere, a night under the lights at the Riverside can help, because, you know, Borough needs something to spark the season. We thought that was going to be Forest. And that's why I describe Blackpool as probably the most disappointing defeat of Warnock's tenure so far, in that we came away from Forest, regardless of how poor they were, thinking, right, let's kick on now. We've got two games against the Blackpool team that, you know, you should be beating at home, and a Reading team that, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No, they're in crisis on and off the pitch. Yeah, you don't need me. I'm sure you've discussed already. No centre-halves, no centre-forwards, uncertainty as to the points deduction situation. For Borough to be so timid and lifeless at Reading was so disappointing. And then obviously, after Sheffield United, you've got Hull. Anything but a win there, given their form, would be inexcusable. And you know, it'd be a grim and long 2 weeks if you go into the international break without at least one win in the next two games.
So thanks for that, Dom. Dana, he said that, you know, it'd be unlikely that Middlesbrough could make a change, but are we actually coming towards the end in Neil Warnock's reign, do you think? In your opinion, of course.
I mean, it doesn't help that the fans are turning on him as well. I mean, I don't know whether this is going to be brought into the Riverside and that the atmosphere is going to get a little bit anti-Warnock, but there's definitely, especially after yesterday's game, there's definitely been a lot more louder calls for Warnock to leave. And Dom pointed out there about it doesn't feel like Warnock's approach is dated, and I hear what he's saying completely, but I think it's dated for this Borough side. I think he's done what he can, and he kept us up when I genuinely thought we were going down. But it's got to the point now where he has some fantastic options at his disposal. You only have to look at Andres Sparrar and the movement that he has, and we're still playing these long balls into the channels. Whereas I think with Sparrar, you look at him and you think, right, balls along the floor, in behind. And I know it's, you know, we've had, what, four games of Sparrar, but we've seen already that Forest goal and the move before it, that if you give him that type of service, he's going to have chances. And there were even times in that Reading game where we did. It was just that he didn't really get a good enough connection on the ball. But for the most part, we are playing a style that just doesn't suit the players at his disposal. In fact, I'd say the only player that it does suit is Matt Crooks, because he's obviously fantastic. I think they put a style up on Sky Sports. Matt Crooks is one of the most aerial jewels for us.
So I was going to say, imagine it was like Sky Sports put said Matt Crooks is fantastic, and then like that was the start. Sorry, I was just digging.
Signed by Neil Warnock.
Yeah, just cracked. It was popped in my head. Just cracking up on it. Sorry.
But no, I feel like the options that we have now, I'm thinking James Lasalicki, Martin Piero, Sparrar. These are players that are not going to benefit from playing the Warnock way. So I feel like his style is dated for this Borough team. He's taken us as far as he can with it, in my opinion. I'm looking at our fixtures. I can't see where the next 3 points are going to come from. And for me, I don't think a point is good enough, really. Now, I think we need 3 points to kickstart something. And as Dom mentioned, we don't seem to be able to really get a run going at the moment, which is really frustrating.
Else?
I agree with a lot of what Dana said, but I don't feel like we're anywhere near it as well. It doesn't feel like enough. There's enough volatile sort of stuff coming in from either the club or the fans. I feel like it's a bit 50-50 at the moment from the fans. Yeah, I think if it rolls on into Christmas, how it got like with Woodgate and stuff, and it goes into that New Year period, and we're still languishing around that bottom three or four. Not even three or four, to be honest, because when, as you've mentioned there, with two teams with point deductions, then it kind of makes it seem even worse, because they'd both be above us on points. So really, it's like you're second bottom at that case. I don't feel like it's coming. I don't feel there's enough like from the club, especially with all the signings. They'll be putting it down as, you know, they've only had a couple of games because a few of them came in on deadline day and whatnot. So I still think we're probably a canny way from that happening. So I hope we obviously get some results before then. But coming back to just one point, what Dana mentioned there on Forrest and Sparrar, it plays into the Ruud Gullit theory. Dyke Seals tackle, Tavernier's pass, goal.
There you go.
I missed that Dyke Steel tackle. Mind you, Bowler did it. Bowler did the trademark Dyke Steel tackle yesterday. So fullback squad coming through there.
Yeah, when we speak about Neil Warnock as well, just to make a point, I feel like he's a very short term fix for a long term plan, very much like that duct tape over a burst pipe. And you're going to have to change it eventually. But I think with him now, I can only just see it heading one way, and it disappoints me really. I think when Neil Warnock comes in, you kind of want not success, but you want stability. You want a cliche, Don Goodman, you know what you're going to get, and you want team to be efficient, you know. Neil Warnock's sides are efficient, and the grind out results, we don't do any of that. And out of his 66 games in charge, I can't even think of five maybe where I've came away and thought I really enjoyed that game. I was watching it yesterday and I was just so disappointed, really disappointed. Not just the lack of creativity, I'm just not entertained. I'm just sat there, like, kind of thinking, what's the point in playing ref? Do you know what I mean?
I think it would have been a fairy tale if he got promoted for like his final season in football. I don't think many of us were expecting that, but I didn't expect a relegation fight if it's going to go that way, because that's where we were 2 years ago when this week came here to stop. Yeah. Obviously, I don't think many of us were even expecting to get promoted, but if we just put together a good season, especially with the players we've signed permanently, obviously we know the loan players are then going to go back, and then you fill in around it, and hopefully we don't need to make 12 signings, because you have to completely overhaul the squad every summer. It's not going to help. Obviously every team makes transfers, even if it's only Liverpool making one or two, I think, that even that they made this season. Yeah. But you've still got to blood in new players for positions that move on and stuff. So yeah, I think that's just all that we want, really, just to see some results. I don't expect any of us to go up, but just put together a bit more of a challenge.
I don't think we're a side that'll go up. I know, like I said, judges at Christmas, and I'm still backing that theory. I think the only way you can really get a good picture of Borough is around Christmas time of February, where it's the busiest time of the year, and you know that's when the most games are played, and that's where you get, obviously, the most points as well. But with us at the moment, I'm with you, Dana, I can't see us really getting results, to be honest. I know when I was speaking to Ant this morning from Hull and back, and we were saying that Hull, I think, have won like 8 games in 83 or something in the Championship or something, and I was just like, that is just typical Borough for us to go there and get absolutely spanked.
Well, it was like the game, Christ, who was it under now? Was it under Neil Warnock, where
it was
completely abject in that? No, it was under Woodgate, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was at the at the end of the season.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so that was the moment we all thought he went, because he came. I think we beat Stoke,
and
we nicked a draw against someone. I was like, okay, we've got 4 points here, and you think we were just going to kick on and really pull away from the relegation zone, and Hull were in there around us, and they beat us at their ground, and I was like, how was that? Just I don't think they won another game after that.
Yeah, but obviously they didn't.
I think we managed to beat Reading away and stuff, didn't we? And managed to stay up. But
well, it's a good point that you made, Johnny, about you're not entertained. And with Neil Warnock's style of play, it's not always pretty football. It's not necessarily good on the eye. And then it's sort of a bit of a double hit, really, when you're not getting the results either. So that's why I sort of say, going back to Dom's point about it not being dated, that's why I feel like it is, because if you're not picking up results and you're playing the way that we are, with no midfield build-up, no attacking patterns, no passing patterns, no passing combinations, the fans start to think, well, what are we doing here? And I suppose you can only keep the fans happy if you keep the results ticking over, and we're not. And that's incredibly frustrating. And then you add the style of play on top of it, and it's not great.
That's it. And I think with like the options, you know, we've got the amount of options that we have on the wide players. So what if we have options there? You know what I mean? You've got to have your principle. You've got your 11. Stick to what is going to get your result. It doesn't matter like if you're going to have to leave three or four players out. If you've got a system and it works, and you're really, and obviously the data backs it, and you know how you want to manage a game and your specific style, then go with that system. It doesn't matter. Like, then that's where Neil Warnock will come in and be like, look, I'm leaving you out because we're not fitting the system. This player's playing better for X, Y, and Z. That's where he should be making his money, really, not to try and shoehorn about five attacking midfielders in just because the fans have sold him. So, do you know what I mean?
Well, it goes back to what Elliot said about him being a good man manager, but not a particularly, what it seems anyway, not a particularly great tactician. Because this isn't the first time after a window that he's had the options. I mentioned the last podcast about January when we brought in the wide players, and we all thought that that was the problem with Borough. The problem, I suppose. I mean, we were in good form before then, but we all thought that that was the push towards the top six. We brought in Lassi Cabano, Mendes Lang, Daniel Fisher, I know he's a fullback, but we brought in wide players and we did go backwards, and that's where our form started to turn. And that's a reason for me that an inexperienced manager should sort of have the pass off, not a Neil Warnock with how many, I think they put a stat on the screen, Sky with their stats. I think isn't it like a 40-something season as a manager for Neil Warnock? I would expect Neil Warnock to get more out of these players and the options that he has.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one interesting thing I've seen from this year, and we're going probably back to the Reading game a little bit, but we're becoming a lot more expansive as a side, which is strange, really, for a Neil Warnock team, because every time you see them, especially when you look at probably Cardiff, they're quite narrow. They're very narrow, they're compact, and then when they go attack, I mentioned in the last podcast, they're attacking a diamond. Where like your wide players and your probably your number eight, really, they'll push up the pitch and they'll create the opportunities, and you have your solid base behind that. We don't really have that at the moment. We've got, let's just get the ball across the back line, hoof it a long ball to Jonesy and see what happens. You know what I mean? That's exactly what it's like. And I'm very intrigued at what Warnock's trying to do. He should know, and I think he does know behind the scenes what he's wanting to do, but whether it's going to replicate that on the pitch or we do that on the pitch is probably another matter, really.
We did have that, didn't we, before we signed Blassie and Co. in that January, because we only had natural wide players. We only had Marcus Brown, who was probably injured at the time. We had Tavernier, and that was it. And we resorted to playing wing backs, and we were using the sort of diamond shape in the midfield with Saville and Tav even filling in there in centre of midfield. And that's when it was working. We were going away and grinding out results. 1-0 away at Bristol City springs to mind straight away, of a really solid performance of what we've been saying all along of what a typical Neil Warnock team does. So.
Shape's poor. Our shape's really poor. Really poor. When you look at us from previous teams or previous...
Average positions. Had to tilt to Elliot there.
Really poor. It's really poor. But do guys, you think that the games against Sheffield United and Hull are... crunch time, or for Neil Warnock's case, a snap, crackle and pop time, because he loves the cereal. There you go. Gag of the day.
Guys both.
But do you think it is crunch time or snap, crackle and pop time? This podcast is brought to you by Rice Krispies.
I feel like to us fans, it probably is. But I feel like to the hierarchy of the club, probably not. I think if we snag a draw against Sheffield United, I'd be happy with that, which sounds depressing as a home fan saying it when you think of, like, you know, the levels of where we could be. But just based on pure form and the players that Sheffield United have, I'd be happy with the draw in that game. And then Hull, I think, is a must win for the form they've been in and the fact that, you know, the team we've got compared to theirs, after just coming back up, we should be winning that game. So if you look at it, like, that should be 4 points, but we all know it's never that easy.
What was the question again?
Is it snap, crackle and pop time against Sheffield United and against Hull as well?
Well, if we don't pick up a result against Hull, then this should be even more serious questions asked, to be honest, given their woeful form and their woeful start to the season. But I think I agree with Elliot that I feel like the hierarchy are probably quite relaxed at the moment. And again, what Dom said, Warnock isn't going to walk, is he? He's not going to sort of tarnish his potentially last season, probable last season in management by waving the white flag and walking away. But then at the same time, if after two more games, we've still only recorded two wins this season, then we could well be in the bottom three. So there has to be some serious questions raised, I think.
Okay, well, let's chat about Sheffield United then. And this week we spoke to Johnny from the Shoreham View podcast to get a breakdown of Sheffield United this season.
Hiya, my name's Johnny and I'm from the Shoreham View Sheffield United fan channel on YouTube. So, Borough on Tuesday night, after another win for us against Derby, an hard-earned win, I might add. It's a strange one. A trip to Borough is always difficult, but if we can keep up the form we're in, I don't see any reason why we can't continue the winning run. I'm sure you'll have a lot to say against that, because obviously you'll not want to lose at the Riverside. Neil Warnock never likes losing against Sheffield United. So it's got all the makings of a tough game for both sides, really. As far as how we line up, we started off the season with a bit of a 4-3-3, slight change in the tried and tested 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, however you want to look at it. And it was slow starting it. They weren't really playing the speedy football they wanted. Now we're starting to get used to it. We play a mix between a 4-3-2-1, and that sometimes turns into a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. It's very strange. It's very fluid, not strange. It's very hard to describe because it seems to fluctuate and change every other minute in the game, which on paper sounds horrific and chaotic, but on the pitch it's quite beautiful at times and can lead to some good attacking football, which is something that we've been missing for about a season and a half, and we're actually starting to put the ball in the net, which is something we've been without for a long time. Either way, it should be a cracking game, however we line up, really. Players to watch out for: the loanee Morgan Gibbs-White has been sensational. He's just something else, and he really adds a spark to our team. Everything seems to come through him. He's not scared to have a go on goal. He's very athletic, very fast, very good on the ball, very, very clever player. Reminds me of Matt Phillips when he was younger. The other player to look out for is Billy Sharp. Don't care how old he is, whether he's 19 or 54, Billy Sharp scores goals, and he seems to be hitting a hell of a form at the moment. So if you're going to keep an eye out for any player, it's going to be him. Game itself, prediction-wise, you know what? I can see it being a 2-2 draw.
Okay, so thanks for that, Johnny. Els, are you surprised at how Sheffield United have started the season? They are on a good run, of course, now under Jurcanovic, but were you surprised at the slow start?
Yeah, definitely. I think for, you know, the players that they have in the team, would expect them to have been up and around there with West Brom and Fulham and Bournemouth. So it is a bit surprising. But yeah, I expect them to be, you know, in the next couple of games. You know, there's not many points between that and the top at the moment, given that there's only been 9 games played. So I feel like they'll catch up quite quickly. That game the other week against Peterborough, I think that the beat them 6-1 or 6-2, was it? So that kind of scares me. But yeah, the quality of some of the players that they've came down with, Sander Berg,
is that Sanderberg,
really, yeah. Really springs to mind. I feel like he's going to control the game very well against us, and I haven't actually seen him play all that much, so I'll be quite interested to watch him, which seems weird coming from a Borough fan, but it'll just be good to see what the likes of our midfielders should be doing. In all honesty. But Yeah.
Johnny says, Dana, that free-flowing, rotating formations, overloads from the wingers, free-flowing football from Jokanovic's side, which they're not used to. it normally does take Jokanovic about 10 games for him to get going, but when they do get going, they can't stop. So, but where do you see him at the end of the season? Do you see him up there?
Yeah, definitely. I was watching their game against, I think it was Birmingham earlier on in the season, and I was a bit disappointed with them, really. I think that it was easy to target them. They were playing wing-backs. Ben Osborne was overlapping, but he was a particular issue in terms of his height at the back post. Maxime Collin was getting a few sort of aerial battles against him. But, I mean, I typed here, Sanderberg looks a cut above. I can see him really pulling the strings against us. There's Morgan Gibbs-White as well, and Ndiaye. They seem to be the two biggest threats for them this season. So I'm just looking at their last game. Who scored has their formation down as a 4-2-3-1, so they've obviously switched. Probably good for them, but bad for Borough, because there was definitely a weakness there in Ben Osborne as a wing-back. But, yeah, I mean, they're a fantastic team. They should be up there come the end of the season.
All right, so what are your predictions for the game on Tuesday night against Sheffield United?
My heart really wants to say a draw, but yeah, the home games, the QPR game and Blackpool game have really put fear in me that I think this is going to be quite a drubbing. The weird thing is with the QPR and Blackpool one, I think, is we had a really good start and faded in the second half. I feel like that's not going to go this way this time. So I'm going to say 2-0 to Sheffield United.
2-0 Sheffield United, Dana?
I can see the same, to be honest. I think that their key players will probably cut us open. And yeah, the starting Elliot just alluded to it there about our second halves. Yeah, if they get a chance at the start of the second half, then that's really going to set the tone for the rest of that 45. So I think their quality is going to be too much for us. But to be fair, it could be a game that suits us in that sort of man marking, stifling their play. Well, maybe last season it would have been, but I don't know. We just seem to be too easy to beat at the moment.
Yeah, when we went to Norwich, that was a very good performance for us. But you know,
just need Darnell Fisher back, Dana, really, don't we?
Need Darnell Fisher back, yeah.
Pocket Cromwell.
So 2-0 for you as well, Dana. So yep. I'm going to go with 2-1, I think.
Actually, I'm going to change mine to 2-1.
2-1, okay. We're both going 2-1. Yep. 2-1 Sheffield United. I think they've just got a bit too much for us. But the thing is, with these games, I'm expecting nothing. So Borough will probably produce the best performance of the season, win 6-0, and everything will be rosy on the T-side. But then on Saturday, we were playing Hull City, and we spoke to Ant from the Hull and Back podcast to get all of the breakdown on Hull City this season.
Hi there, it's Ant from the Hull and Back podcast. Thanks for having me on. Quick insight to us. We will only play one way. There is no variation in our play. It's one of our problems with the current manager. It worked last season. Well, we've been playing the same way since relegation from the Premier League, to be fair. You know, we had the likes of Jared Bowen and Kamal Grzycki on the wings. The 4-3-3 with sort of an inside forward on either side worked very well with them too. But since selling them, it's gone rapidly downhill. I think one of the issues is that we should have found another way to play, another way to score. And we kept playing as though we still had them both, and obviously eventually went from just outside the playoffs to 24th place in the Championship. Now, we incorporated the same system last season, and it worked. Obviously, it's a level below. We've got the likes of Keane Lewis-Potter and Malik Wilkes on the wings, who are very dangerous, like to cut inside and have a pop. They want to get in behind. They're quite pacey, they're tricky. And we've got a high energy midfield. You know, we had the likes of Greg Doherty, George Honeyman. They're just box to box dynamos, threats at both sides, quite easily. Quite happy to win the ball back, but also be laying the ball on and score themselves. This season we've missed Honeyman, so we've kind of missed our main player that gave us that impetus to go forward and really ask questions. Doherty's been playing very well, but we've had a very, very rotated team. We've got a lot of midfield options and we've had a lot of injuries and COVID ravaged us, and then we've had a transfer embargo, so we've not been able to sign the quality of players that we probably needed to in order to properly compete at this level. We've been restricted to free transfers and loans. I mean, we've still done quite well given those circumstances. We came out the transfer window with 9 players. We've got some good quality players in there. We brought Tom Huddleston back, Randall Williams, Ryan Longman, Tyler Smith. We've added well. Loney, Deshaun Bernard from Man United under 23s is very promising, very good. The only issue is we've got a very inexperienced squad. Even with the new signings, they're all young and upcoming. Not much championship experience in there at all, barring the likes of Tom Huddleston, Josh McGuinness. But other than that, we're a very inexperienced team and it's showing. So in terms of what you're going to look for from us, we're going to try, well, McCann would tell you that we're going to try and press high and play out from the back and be on the front foot. In reality, we're going to be very sideways, very backwards, hit the ball long and invite pressure all game. So, at the moment, we're really struggling to score. So if you guys get the first goal, it's pretty much nailed on for you to win. Players to look out for in our team, on the day, King Lewis Potter can give a fullback an absolute nightmare. He scored 2 already in a team that's only scored 5 across 2 games that we've scored in. We've got the likes of Malik Wilkes, who was last season's top scorer, 22 goals, who's not really hit the heights of last season yet. Jacob Greaves is our upcoming centre-half, ball-playing centre-half, likes to bring out from the back. Very promising. Louis Coyle in right-back, been outstanding so far, probably one of our best players. But in terms of real threat, we don't tend to have one at the moment. We're hoping Tyler Smith can be sort of that player that changes our fortunes, changes our look and brings some goals in, because he offers something different to McGuinness, who last season was perfect for the role because he held the ball up and he gave it to the other two. But Tyler Smith is a pacey forward. He wants to get in behind. He wants to really press that defence and cause problems. And since he's joined and the small cameo appearances he's made, he's been very good. So hopefully he starts and we can kick on from his sort of lead. But other than that, we're quite weak and feeble at the minute. We've only scored in 2 games out of the 9. Our championship record under McCann is woeful and optimism's very low. So, in terms of a prediction for the game, I'd like to think that we could maybe come away with it with at least a point. But the first goal is crucial. I think if we score first, we might get a bit of a boost of enthusiasm, but if we concede first, there's only usually one outcome, because we just can't seem to bring the game back at the minute. So good luck for after this game, but thanks for having me.
Right, so Dana, Ant was speaking there, he's saying he's clearly not happy with this current style of football at the moment. They've regressed a little bit, Hull City, especially with their ownership and squad, but can you see them maybe just staying up this season, Hull?
Not really, no, to be honest. I mean, they're the lowest scorers in the championship, the bottom of the form table. It seems as though they're just not getting it right, really. Last 5, 3 defeats, 2 draws. It's not great for them. I think we should beat them, but then again, there's no guaranteed result in the championship, is there? And as always with every team, if you've got a player that can run off the ball, then you're going to get chances against us.
Okay, well, let's do predictions then, because it's a must win for Borough on Saturday if we don't get a performance on Tuesday. So Els, you're going to the game, of course. Expecting a win at the KC?
I hope so. It'll be a great day out, and I think we sold out the initial allocation. I know we've got another 700, so another great following from Borough given the performances. So I think another point I wanted to say just on having what I thought Dana was going to say was if you have an ex-Borough player playing for you, we all know what's going to happen. Richie Smallwood's going to pop up with the goal.
Oh, I forgot he was there.
So I think he scored on the opening day for them. So I think my feelings will probably change as the week goes on, especially after the Sheffield United game. But right now, my heart's telling me a win. Based on everything, you know, the league, the form and everything like that, the quality of the two teams. But I don't think we're going to run away with it. I think, you know, we're going to have to grind out some results until we get into a bit of better form. So I'll go for a 2-1 win to Borough.
2-1 win for Borough. Dana, are you going to echo Elliot and go for a win?
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-0, a little bit like the Bristol City game earlier at home.
Okay, so now I'm going to go 1-0. I think we're going to grind our result out. And then happy days. And you watch. We'll beat Sheffield United. Yeah, we'll get beat again. but let's do podcast questions. So it's obviously every week that you guys give us a questions on Twitter and we answer them on the podcast. So Elliot, I'm going to come to you first. It's from Danny Beamore. And he says, if you're an opposition manager, would you look at us and fear us? What tactics would you use?
I think you'd be wrong to not fear us. I still think we've got players who can hurt the opposition. But I think, as we've alluded to a lot in this podcast, the tactics which you have to use to hurt us is if you know that we're going to play the man marking system. If you create overloads and double ups out wide, then you've got space to get in behind. And if you nullify, if you try and recognise pretty early what our main threat is if Isaiah Jones is playing, we're going to try and give the ball to him a lot, and we're going to bypass the midfield, so you know that, you know, the defenders are going to have to be up for a few aerial duels and whatnot, and I think Sheffield United will be more than up for that. So yeah.
Okay. Then next question is from Tiny. Says, do you think Warnock's style is really hurting our technically gifted players like Pizarro?
It's probably too early to give a definitive answer on Pizarro himself, but just given what we've seen of Neil Warnock so far and the fact that, as Elliot mentioned there, we do bypass the midfield, then it doesn't help, though. I think to have a possession-based style would probably be best for the likes of Pizarro and Saliki, which is funny because, again, Saliki's passing was awful. Straight in, but I'm confident that those both of those players will improve. I mean, the caliber of them. People say, well, Pizarro's coming from the Argentinian league, but I think that's a bit of a doing it him a disservice, really, because he's quite clearly a highly rated talent. And yeah, Saliki has had his injury problems, but I think he's a top quality player.
I think
as well.
He was playing Champions League football, was he not?
He played it last season because I was watching a game ran against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Champions League winners, Chelsea.
Mm. Well, I think you will come good as well, Saliki. But is it hurting our technically gifted players? I think you just need to get the technically gifted players on the ball, to be honest. That's
exactly
it. But it seems like we're not doing that. Next question is from Cameron. He says, all of the injuries we are getting are the same type in terms of like muscle injuries. Is there a problem in training causing all of these? If so, surely that's Warnock's fault. Els, do you think it's Warnock's fault that all these players are getting the injuries?
It's an interesting one. I don't think you can really put it down to just one person. It's a club philosophy if the injuries are all coming from the same. Maybe it's just, you know, bad luck and coincidence. But if it continues, not really on the fans, I guess, to look in because we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But I don't think it's just on Warnock. It's obviously down to the full coaching staff and the,
the players,
physiotherapy,
and
the players themselves, if they're overexerting themselves. We've got enough
on the man marking.
Exactly, yeah.
Man marking, isn't it?
We've got enough rotation options now, I think, for people not to be playing week in, week out. So I don't think that's too much of an issue. So I think, it could be down to that.
You always get more injuries when you're playing bad as well. Always found that.
We noticed that the other year, didn't we, with... when it was Woodgate saying, it just seemed like the whole team was either injured or suspended.
Yeah, so there you go. Next question is from Johnny. Says, now we have a head of football. Does the decisions of sacking and hiring managers fall with Kieran Scott and not Gibson? I can take it if you want. Or do you want it?
I don't think it falls to Kieran Scott, no. I think he is involved from what we always know, usually of director of footballs, and is that what they've called him, a head of football?
Head of football.
I think it's more player-based than manager-based. I think it has to come down to the order and that. I know you can have other club positions for the managerial stuff and staff as well, but I don't think Kieran Scott will really have a say in that, to be honest.
Okay. You want to echo that, Dan, or are you? You're good.
Maybe. I mean, it'll be difficult for him to sort of have that responsibility straight away. Maybe somewhere down the line he will have that, but he's pretty much just come in, hasn't he?
Yeah, so. Depends how influential he is. You can't just, you know, Gibson can't just say, I'll come in. If you feel like we should sack him, mate, we'll go for it. It's kind of like he's got to trust Warnock and his two henchmen, hasn't he? So you can't just trust everything that... what's his name again? I forgot his name now.
Kieran Scott.
He said Neil Scott. I'm thinking it's definitely not
Neil Scott.
I forgot his first name.
I thought you were going to say Barry Scott from Joe Salipa.
Well, he'd be a good head of football, wouldn't he? But overall, I don't think he'll really have a say. And I hope he doesn't, because I don't think it should be down to him anyway. I think it should be player-based, then it continues throughout wherever the managers are. I know that the managers and players kind of go hand-in-hand with building an identity of a club, but yeah.
Okay, next question. It's quite a harsh one. It's from Dave McNally. He says, sorry to be harsh, but what competition did Alessandro win to get a game yesterday? Oh, God. I think he won a raffle. A joke. Anyway, poor game from Alessandro yesterday. Still trying to find his feet at this level, Dana.
Not you giving that question to me.
Do you want me to answer?
No, it's fine. Yeah, it was an interesting cameo. We'll put it that way. I mean, we do have to remember that he was picked up from Billericay, which is, you know, they're in non-league. Yeah, so I thought his first cameo against, it was Blackburn, wasn't it, where he absolutely dive-bombed Lewis Travis onto the floor. I thought there was definitely better attributes in that game, better positives to take from that game. But he didn't have the greatest of cameos yesterday, I don't think.
No, I don't think he did either. I thought he was quite poor yesterday, but it's very early days, of course. Next question is from Jonathan, and he says, when was the last time you consistently enjoyed watching Borough play? Els, do you want to take this one?
I feel like everybody knows the answer.
The Karanka years. There we go.
I was literally talking about it yesterday with a friend, just saying, like, you know, in adult lifetime supporting Borough. Obviously, it's different depending on other people's ages, I guess. But I've had, like, two enjoyable years, which were those 2 years. Obviously, I remember going as a kid to the games in the UEFA Cup years and stuff, but I don't think I fully appreciated what it was at the time. So... yeah, I'd have to just put down that was the last time, really.
Yeah, all in agreement.
Yeah.
Oh, easy question. And then the last one of the day is from Liam, and he says, what's the best Warnock-esque excuse for poor performances you can come up with?
That Jared Branthwaite's flailing foot sent shockwaves over the Teesside area, knocked out the Wi-Fi. Karen, the receptionist, didn't print off the Duolingo documents, and that Martin Piero didn't get the instructions to press properly yesterday.
I don't know if I can beat that, to be perfectly honest. I was just going to say something about the ref, but I think Dana's won there.
That's the ref's fault, though, yeah. Mine personally was the serial one, I think.
Mine was a bit extravagant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know where to take it, no. I think mine would probably go for... I thought we were really poor today, mainly due to us eating at 7 o'clock last night. We had a steak, and I thought it was a bit too much for some of the lads.
The players were probably out all morning putting together that. I can't remember this guy's name as well. I'm terrible with names.
That narrows it down.
The coach doing his sink. His kitchen was it?
Kevin Blackwell.
All the lads were helping Kevin exactly. with his sink, and you know Martin Pajero got caught with a pipe, and I feel awful for that. I really do, because he's going to play it today.
Got a fly in his eye, chipping the keeper. That was a funny tweet. That was of it. I'm surprised someone hasn't mentioned something about Gavin Ward. Somehow managed to wrangle some blame towards Gavin Ward. Maybe he put too much salt on a steak or something.
Yeah, probably could be.
Gave Leo a red card and then he couldn't translate for Piero.
Yeah.
maybe one that's going to blame us for our Sparach, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe. I blame the Borough breakdown for telling teams how we play. There you go.
You crackers.
I think actually what we do need to change at home is we need to change this, like, the soundtrack that we have before the game. I feel like it's becoming a bit superstitious now. We start off with that the one from the meme machine. I can't remember the name of it. I'm terrible. Just ignore me.
But then your brain's just stopped, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's that one. But then the next song, I don't know the name of it, but it goes, "What is love?" That one. That comes on just before the start of the game, and the lights go crazy. And it's absolutely the worst atmosphere ever.
I don't think we've done that in a while.
We have.
I don't think we can, because of Crooks and Jones. I think the ball got epilepsy, I think. I don't think we can do that anymore.
We definitely play that morgue version of the Seven Nation Army.
Yeah.
The very inspiring tune of the very downbeat version of the song.
I just think we need to change the soundtrack, because that's just reminiscent of, like, us being terrible. Like, since we've done that, we've been terrible.
I've got a feeling on there, haven't we?
I've got a feeling on repeat for, like, 45 minutes.
The thing is, that's never on, because we never win.
Yeah.
So... Might as well play that before the start of the game, because you're never going to hear it afterwards.
Manifest something.
Yeah, the I Got a Feeling button's just getting dustier and dustier each week, isn't it? I feel like one day we're just going to have to put on, even if we get absolutely spanked off Sheffield United. Just like...
Get that out and get the
confetti just...
get that song back on and get the Borough flag out that we were just talking about, the one from the North Stand, and just put it across the West, just have Steve Gibson hold it and just move across the West Stand up with it.
I'm going to say, don't do it in the North Stand, because I'll be the only one holding up. Okay.
What about the East Stand?
I forget the East End. Yeah.
Family zone.
We are the East End.
I'm not singing it.
All right, then. Okay, since you're not singing it, Dana, that's it then. So one win in 7, 11 in 34, and pressure starting to mount under boss Neil Warnock. It's crunch time on Teesside already, or is it snap, crackle and pop? This has been the Borough Doom and Gloom podcast, and it's been all of your match day chatter in a pod. Up the Borough breakdown.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.